Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
You're welcome along to Wednesday Night Rugby. Roy O'Connor of the Irish Independent is in studio. How are you?
Good, thanks, Nathan.
And Liam Toland is on the line. Evening, Liam.
How are you, Nathan?
So a heavyweight Heineken Champions Cup final coming your way. It'll be live here on Off the Ball on Saturday evening. Leinster against Saracens. We will talk plenty about that in just a couple of moments. But I want to start on the big story of the last 24 hours, that forwards coach Gerry Flannery, backs coach Felix Jones have turned down new contracts at Munster and will leave the province at the end of the season. This feels as though it came out of the blue, Rory. Were there any warning signs there that maybe Flannery and Jones were considering a departure?
I think when the word came out that Munster were looking to hire an experienced attack coach, it certainly looked like it would infringe on what Felix Jones has been doing, or would kind of, you know, would potentially ruffle his feathers. But all the noises have been from, you know, this obviously when you hear that you start looking into it. When Van Graan's new contract was signed until 2022, the two assistants weren't announced at the same time, which you know raised some eyebrows. But the noises coming out of Munster were that they were fairly confident the two of them were going to sign on, that they had, you know, offers were made. But it feels like Jones has decided that with Van Graan kind of running the attack and now looking for someone with Rob Howley's the name being mentioned, but I don't know if that's if it's definitely going to be him yet. He's definitely in talks with them, but it may, you know, with a senior attack coach coming in, he felt his role would be reduced. And I get the sense that they come as a package, and with Jones deciding he was going to head for the exit doors, Flannery decided to go with him. And while coaching departures in the, you know, the backroom team are nothing new for teams, the timing is awful in terms of being 3 weeks left in the season, it being a World Cup year. It's left Van Graan there with JP Ferreira as his only assistant facing into next season. He's the defence coach. So he now needs to go, rather than bring in a kind of an overall guru in the Graham Henry, well, Leinster brought in Graham Henry for a while to look over the whole thing and kind of come up with solutions for the team that are there. He now needs to hire effectively an entire new backroom team. He needs a scrum coach, a forwards coach, and an attack coach as well. So it's left him in the lurch, and just at a time when it looked like they'd achieved cohesion with Van Graan's new contract,
yet it again undermines the transition.
Yeah. And I think Munster, for all that they can't compete with Leinster in terms of in terms of geographical advantage, population advantage, commercial advantages, they can certainly go toe-to-toe when it comes to strategy. They can be smarter. And when you see them go and sign, you know, young South African kids, and, you know, that's smart. That's kind of future-proof. Mm. People might not like it, but it's intelligent. When it comes to recruitment, they can't go out and sign the big names. They've got to be smart. But if their strategy needs to be really smart, and this doesn't look like they've really thought this out. And Van Graan is already doing the job with three people doing Leinster on his own. And now he has to plot all this stuff while also preparing for next week, which is the biggest game of their season, which will show whether they've made any progress or not. It's very hard to dress it up as anything other than a blow.
So is your sense then that this wasn't a money issue, that it was a case that Felix Jones was maybe going to see his role somewhat diluted by an addition of a Rob Howley, or certainly an attack coach, and simply he wouldn't have as much power as he would have had in the dressing room?
Look, I won't pretend that I know that it's not a money issue. That level of detail hasn't come out, and neither coach has made a comment on it, and that I'm not aware of what the terms are that were offered to them and whether they were reduced or not. I don't think they were, but I don't know that for sure. There is a couple of rumours floating around about the two of them going somewhere next season. Again, that will make, you know, if that happens, the whole thing might make a lot more sense. But right now, on the face of it, and from talking to people behind the scenes a little bit, it seems like it's more that the role was reduced, and Flannery and Jones felt that the time was right to move on.
And do you think if they go somewhere next season, they'll go together?
There is that speculation, but there's nothing firmer than that. I don't know that for sure.
Liam, the quotes from Gerry Flannery are that this was a dream job for him to coach Munster. Felix Jones talking about what an honour it was to be involved with Munster. And even Munster's acting CEO, Philip Quinn, his quote saying that himself and Johan noted all along that the province was committed to retaining the services of both Gerry and Felix, and I believe the Professional Game Board made every effort to retain the coaching duo with competitive terms. So he doesn't seem to think it was a money issue. What's your take on it all?
Well, there's a lot of unknown unknowns in it, really, Nathan. I think the first thing is that what were the conversations between the management team themselves, Johan Van Graan and the two coaches in question? And it's a little like players moving on. You unless you were sitting in the room listening to the conversation, and in lots of cases, we're obviously not in any of those conversations. But it would appear to me what Rory is saying, I'm building on what Rory is saying, that there is a change of sorts coming in. It would appear to me that that is going to impact, obviously, Felix Jones et al. And it would appear that the likes of, say, there's opportunity all over the place, but the likes of, say, London Irish is a potential, and that's being floated around as well. But until we understand the conversation and the choice being presented to both Felix and Jerry, how do we know what their motivation was to leave? Was it like we're speculating, aren't we? But those two guys are particularly committed and loyal to Munster. Those two guys have an awful lot. They've given an awful lot to Munster, but they've also received an awful lot from Munster. So I can't imagine it was a decision made, a knee-jerk reaction decision. And the other thing, part of it is, when was the decision actually made? It was announced, obviously, in recent days. But this could have been made. I certainly don't know. Was this flagged a month ago, 6 weeks ago, two months ago?
Well, Johan van Graan signed his contract at the beginning of April, was it? And he said at the time, now we can focus on signing all the rest of our backroom staff.
Yeah, look, Liam's right. There's always stuff happening behind the scenes that, and sometimes it is slow to come out. But the noises from van Graan himself have been consistently since then. You know, we want to get the two assistant coaches sorted. And, you know, it's rare enough that stories don't come out at all over, you know, there's been no sense that the two coaches were going to leave. So there's always a possibility that they've had time to kind of plan ahead for this. But this one seems to have come late. I mean, van Graan will speak on Monday ahead of the Leinster game. Again, this is going to be the main topic of conversation at his press conference ahead of the Leinster game. Probably not ideal. But even if he's had a couple of weeks to look at this, it's not a good time, because most of the coaching movement that's going to happen in the next 6 months is going to be after Japan. You know, if Rob Howley is the man who's going to lead their attack next season, he won't be around for pre-season. And also, the players who will be there for the Champions Cup games to lead that attack won't be there, because you're going to expect about 10 to 15 Munster players being in the wider Ireland squad before the World Cup.
And we're sitting here next April going, they're just bedding in the new game plan and they've lost the big match and another season's wasted.
Well, that is the concern. And if Van Graan's an experienced forwards coach from Springboks days, he could apply himself to that. But he's also in charge of recruitment. There's an awful lot there for him and JP Ferreira to do, unless they can get someone in very quickly. You know, Paul O'Connell's, you know, leaving Stade Francais at the end of the season. Is he the guy that they can go and tap into, even on a short-term basis? You know, it doesn't sound like he's that interested in being a coach long-term, but maybe the lure of Munster is there. You know, there are people they can bring in, but it does not smack of long-term planning in the way a professional organisation should. And it leaves them behind the eight ball once again going into another season as they try and break that. You know, they're doing so much to get to semi-finals. But if they're going to get beyond that, this is like they need stability, not more and more upheaval every season.
Or do they, Liam? Like, that is, I guess, the big debate maybe around this, that you look at it initially and think, here's two players who know Munster inside and out. How can it be a good thing that they're leaving the province when it feels as though they're building towards something? But we've spent the last few weeks analysing the defeat to Saracens and wondering how Munster can bridge that gap to Saracens, to Leinster. They need some fresh thinking. They need to find a different way of doing things. And actually maybe changing your coaching staff, making some big decisions as Johan van Graan and Munster are maybe doing and bringing in an attack coach. Maybe that's exactly what needs to happen here.
Well, there's a lot of building blocks to where Munster and Leinster and the four provinces have got to, and clearly management of the professional team is an enormously important one. Rory there mentioned pre-season. Pre-season in the modern professional era is split up into kind of two. You've got your players who are part of the Irish squad who come back and get a rest, so they're never quite hitting the entire pre-season, and then the rest of the squad. But pre-season, I agree with Rory, like it's a huge importance to have all your... like I know Dan McFarlane came in late. It does happen, and teams can be successful. But in an ideal world, you want that. So how ruthless is Johan van Graan? Is he driving it? And that goes back to my original point, was I don't know, did the two coaches come in and say, listen, we think we need to move on. We think our careers needs to be, we'd love to come back and all that, but I think now is a good time. That could be their motivation, I don't know. Or it could be Johan van Graan saying to them in 2 months ago, saying, listen, I'm going to make changes. I can't tell you how those changes are going to be, but you need to start looking around. That could have been the case too, or somewhere in between. It really is down to the ruthlessness of the head coach. if he is that ruthless and he feels that the people around him aren't going to get him there. But the evidence would suggest he has been speaking publicly that he wants to tie these two guys up. So it would suggest that that's not the reason. So I'm a little bit confused, to be honest, Nathan.
Yeah, I think if they had, if they were doing this, and I think that, you know, Van Graan, if he hires the right people, this could be a great moment in terms of Munster moving their game plan on, and, you know, that he turns this bit of adversity into an opportunity. And he is a very positive thinking man. We can, you know, anytime you hear him speak, you can get that sense. And he does, you know, with the help of David Nisifora, there are contacts out there who he can get good people in. But I think if he was doing, if it was a ruthless decision to move on from Flannery and Jones, who he inherited, I think we would have heard about it in December, that they would have thanked him and said good luck, you know. And in the same way that kind of Girvan Dempsey, you know, left for Bath, he had time to sort things out. I think it would have been more apparent, and there certainly hasn't been any sense on the market that they've been going out looking for a forwards coach. You know, it's been very clear that they wanted to add another man in, but they had quite a small coaching ticket as it was. It seemed like very much they were bringing someone to add to complement what they already had.
Yeah, and just on that small coaching ticket, you're talking about Johan van Graan having to do the job that three people do in Leinster. Why is that? Is that a resources issue?
It was a decision they took when Razi Erasmus left. So when Anthony Foley found the job too big for him, in terms of he struggled with the team preparation and the recruitment and just juggling all those balls, and admitted it at the time when results were going really badly, which, you know, a bit like when Neil Cullen was there in his first year, he went and got Stuart Lancaster. They went out and they recruited a heavyweight candidate in Razi Erasmus, you know, of the highest order, brought him in. Foley remained as his head coach, and but for Anthony Foley's tragic passing away, it seemed to be working, and Erasmus was very much there to recruit, to plan, to work with the coaching staff, all that sort of stuff, the kind of higher level stuff, and then on the pitch is Foley. When Erasmus left, they got rid of the director of rugby position altogether. They brought in Van Graan, and he has the responsibility for what Erasmus was doing, all of Erasmus's roles, which includes on-field coaching, recruitment. In Leinster, Guy Easterby does the recruitment. Leo Cullen kind of liaises with him, and then he also liaises with Stuart Lancaster, a senior coach. They've also got Felipe Contepomi. They've got a heavyweight coaching ticket, but the three roles that are wrapped into Van Graan's are split between three people, because it's so many things you want to do. If you want to, you know, most teams in the Premiership have directors of rugby who are, you know, hover over at a head coach, whereas Munster just have one guy, you know, a first-time coach who's done a very good job, but he's, you know, he's not 40 yet. It's his first big job. There's a lot of responsibility there. So, you know.
And why do you think that's happening? Is that a money issue?
I don't know. It was a decision they took. I mean, the budget was obviously there to have Erasmus and Anthony Foley plus a couple of coaches underneath them. So I don't see why that budget would have been shrunk. I think Howley would have been coming in as kind of a first team coach below Van Graan to kind of put a structure on things in the way that Lancaster has.
Yeah.
So that could be fixing that problem. But right now, it's just two people. And it seems crazy at this point of the year.
All right, we better move on. Obviously, it'll be a watching brief for Munster this Saturday. It is the final of the Heineken Champions Cup, a mouth-watering clash of the holders, Leinster, against the Saracen side that won the Cup in 2017 and 2016. It will, of course, be live here on Off the Ball. We will have Keith Wood and Andy Dunn alongside Conor Morris. It's a 5 o'clock kickoff build-up throughout the afternoon. St James's Park was rocking last Saturday night when Liverpool got that late winner against Newcastle. St James's Park this year, Bilbao last year, these football pitches for the showpiece occasion of the rugby club season, Liam, are you a fan of it?
Well, I was in the final last year, and it's an incredible stadium. I had a great time. I enjoyed it, and a lot of the fans that were there very much enjoyed it. It was a part-time holiday versus a weekend break versus attending a top-level tournament. I enjoyed it. It's not the traditional way, but I can see the value of it. And certainly the sun was shining, if memory serves correctly, down there.
Mm. So no shortage of history at stake for Leinster on Saturday. A chance to win a record fifth Heineken Cup. Before the semi-final victory against Toulouse, Liam, there seemed to be a general sense that Leinster weren't at the same level as last season. The consistency, the high points weren't quite there. Do you think they're at the same level now as they were heading into last year's final against Racing?
I think that certainly when any discussions we would have had, Nathan, over the weeks would have been understanding the value of certain players who had a stop-start injury-related season. So Robbie Henshaw, for example, was hugely important. Johnny Sexton was hugely important. And they rarely played together. James Lowe, because of the selection of the foreign players, was also, and he had injuries. So it was a rare occurrence this season. I don't know exactly how often they had the full team to select, and precious few times in a season you'll have your full side anyway. But when you had those ingredients in play, all of a sudden, and then Devon Toner back managing the lineouts and with James Ryan and Scott Farley going to the blinds, all that kind of stuff, all of a sudden you knew that Leinster had the ability to peak to the level that would certainly play at. So their consistency issues was less of a, certainly for me, was less of a concern. It was about getting their best players on the pitch, particularly in the playoff stages. So I don't think that's going to be a massive issue. Big call, obviously, the team they selected against Ulster. So the team that we'll be playing this weekend won't have played, what, in three Saturdays? So, like, that's a potential concern, obviously. Just are they going to be motoring match fit? But I've no doubt that with the pedigree that Leinster have, which their pedigree far outshines Saracens in terms of games played in Europe, etc., I've no doubt that they will hit the pitch of the game this weekend. I don't see that consistency issue is going to be an issue for them.
Stuart Lancaster, I think, was flipping that in the press conference on Monday, saying he felt it was very much a good thing that certainly they'd last weekend off, that they had got the bye through to the semi-finals of the Pro 14, that you can find yourself getting a little bit beaten up. And also, a lot of these Leinster players haven't played a huge amount of rugby this season. Johnny Sexton's going to play his 10th game for Leinster on Saturday.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? They do talk up their training a lot, a bit like the Dublin footballers and the Kilkenny hurlers over the years. You hear a lot about these Tuesdays that they put in, that basically they feel like that they would have got, you know, more out of, you know, a Friday training session under Stuart Lancaster than they would have got out of a Pro 14 game and up in Ulster with nothing at stake, plus probably less risk of injury as well. So they feel fit. They're talking very, very positively this week, and they seem to have gotten, they figured out a way of managing match fitness in that way. You know, traditionally you would always, you know, have a bit of fear that they'd be undercooked. But the way they came together for that Toulouse game, and, you know, they were a little bit ropey in the first 5 minutes, but that 13-minute move that led to their opening try was just so slick and smooth and just brought such level of comfort to everyone in the stadium, I think, that Leinster can still get back to the heights that they showed last season when they're on it. And they have done it a couple of times this year, the Wasps game, Toulouse at home. There's been other days when they haven't been anywhere near as good, but I think they restored an awful lot of people's faith in them against Toulouse, and that was based on very little form. And they've just seemed to have got the trick of having their starting 15 plus the players come off the bench, yeah, able to hit the ground running despite that lack of cohesion because of what they do on the training pitch.
And in terms of team selection, Sean Cronin and Rhys Ruddock expected to be fit?
Yeah, that was the was pretty positive. I think tomorrow is the big day for Sean Cronin in terms of being able to, I think they're going to load him up, you know, fully then. They wouldn't normally, I don't think, give a player that much time, but he's such an important figure in their dressing room. Brian Byrne will come onto the bench. He's a lot less experienced than Tracy and Cronin. And Rhys Ruddock apparently is symptom free and over the concussion that ruled him out of that semi-final. So it looks like it will be the same match day 15. Lancaster was definitely dropping a lot of the names that looked very familiar on Monday when he was doing his media. And then Rhys Ruddock would probably come onto the bench for Caelan Dorris in the only change, which means Hugh O'Sullivan would be on the bench in the covering scrum half because Jameson Gibson-Park is injured. And even if he could make it back, James Lowe was too important.
Still though, Liam, from 12 months ago, from the quarterfinal win over Saracens and from the final, the team that started, the main change will be in the back row. It sounds as though Scott Fardy will keep his place, but Dan Levy and Jordy Murphy started those big games a year ago. Sean O'Brien is back. Looks as though he's finally putting together a run of fitness, and Jack Conan just seems to have come on to another level. Which back row three do you prefer? The three that were there this time last year or the three that are likely to start this Saturday?
Well, you can only answer that when you look at the opposition to playing, and I think one of the key aspects of the game that we're facing into, obviously Jerome Garcés' interpretation, the breakdown. And if you look at what Saracens potentially have of spoilers around gaining turnovers, they've got an entire back row that can steal the ball. You've got Mako Vinopola, you've got Billy Vinopola, and you've got their second rows as well, Teje and whomever is playing in the second row, back row, all five of them, including Vinopola, the prop, can steal ball. I don't see the Leinster pack having that amount of threats at the breakdown. Cronin on his day is world class at that, and he can do all the other stuff as well. Conan as a back row, I think he's just brilliant because he creates space for others. He's great ball in hand. But that's an element I think that Saracens might have a subtle edge on, and how Leinster actually, beyond team selection, how Leinster actually can battle that is going to be a key aspect of the day. So yes, Cronin is hugely important, but those other guys you mentioned, Levy has been brilliant in the breakdown, and you've got resources. So if you had a back row of Levy and Sean O'Brien, for example, that now loses a bit of line out, but certainly gains in the breakdown. So O'Brien's brilliant, but I think Saracens might have the edge on this one.
Our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. You can, as always, get in contact on any of our social channels. Looking at the pack then and the potential battle there, one of the things that Saracens do have is a consistency of selection. I think all going well for them, they could go with the exact same pack on Saturday that started the final 2 years ago.
Yeah, and they were missing a couple of those bodies last year. Mm. I think Cock, they used him off the bench in the Munster game, but you know what a sub to bring on, you know, a starting Springbok when he's fit. But they know each other so well. Saracens don't do anything particularly fancy. They just do what they do really, really well. They've got consistency of selection. They've got cohesion in their game plan. They've got the same coaching ticket, the kind of stuff that we were talking about with Munster, that Munster don't have. They've just built and built and built. They got to a couple of finals, semi-finals first, and got to that final against Toulon and lost. Then they got over the line and they stayed there for 2 years. And last year came a cropper against Leinster, down a few bodies, but also came across a better team on the day. And it's funny, Liam was talking about it there. I just watched the first half before coming in of last year's game, and I'm glad I did, because it was a very different game to the one I remembered, because the way Leinster pulled away in that second half.
Yeah.
But Leinster negated a lot of the threats that Saracens had in the breakdown by doing what the All Blacks did to the Lions in the first test in 2017, by going around the corner. Very rarely took the ball off 10, very rarely saw big carriers in the middle. So when the forwards carried, they did it pretty tight, which meant that Saracens' game, they basically took Saracens' game line out of the equation, and then they went wide, and they went wide early. And with the Saracens' wingers were pulled back, they exploited that space, they created mismatches, they won collisions, and they got over the line. And the other thing they did was when Saracens had the ball, they chopped. They went really, really low, went that dove at their feet a couple of times, not using an arm, but again, it's the same referee as it was that day, and he let everything go, as Jerome Garces is liable to do. They're not going to do the same thing again, but there is a bit of a template there I think they can work off. Obviously, Saracens will adapt to that, but they did a much better job of taking away Saracen's strengths than Munster did 3 weeks ago.
Well, you watched back the first half. I listened back to our commentary of the second half earlier on, because Liam, you were working at the game for us at the quarterfinal last year, and my sense was that Leinster kicked on a gear in the second half and ran out pretty comfortable winners. Your analysis at the time was actually that Saracens threw away, I think it was 3 gilt-edged chances in that second half. And I guess that's the warning here for Leinster, that even though everything seemed to go pretty much right for Leinster that day and Saracens were missing quite a number of players, still they almost found a way back into that game.
Yeah, when you look at last night's unbelievable soccer match, Liverpool went into the game with a certain game plan to score. I don't think this weekend Saracens and Leinster are going to go in with that kind of gay abandon to score tries. I think if you take the opening salvo of Munster against Saracens, Munster kicked off, Saracens controlled the ball. Spencer at scrum half box kicked off his left foot. He seems to be left foot kicker, was an interesting potential target for Leinster's fringe defence. He box kicked, it wasn't gathered. He immediately box kicked again. At the breakdown, there was a penalty, and then Farrell scored 3 points. I think this weekend is about imposing your style and how. And I agree with Rory all about the settled nature of Saracens. What they can do is they can play that box-kicking game when they want to, and then they can open it up. And I think Leinster have that ability too. So in lots of cases, the key for the game for me is around the breakdown, are they going to concede turnovers? Because I think Saracens are potentially vulnerable. We saw it in the scrum that Munster hurt Saracens, turned over the ball, and for the first time all season, maybe Munster were comfortable on a turnover and scored a try. I think that would be very, very helpful to Leinster. The scrum itself is going to be extremely helpful to Leinster as well. I think that's an area that they can target. I think the Saracens are going to be recognise Leinster's line-out and the value strategically of Leinster's line-out, the way Leinster at times can control the clock. They will go to line-out mauls an awful lot just to control the clock, just soak up Saracens, suck them in, honeypot them into the, and just march them backwards. I think Saracens will have a methodology to cut that down. You mentioned, Rory, chop tackling around the fringes. Well, a version of that in a line-out maul to get that, to prevent Leinster from dominating in that sense. And then you're right, with all of that then, like the ability of Saracens when they get a quick ball and when the scrum half, be it Wigglesworth or Spencer, whomever, gets the ball, he always has multiple targets to hit to expose fringe defenders. And I think Leinster are just the same. So for me, it's a game of patience, counter-attack, nullifying each other at the set piece. And then when the opportunity comes, both sides are equally capable of exploiting space.
With Henshaw fit and James Lowe available for selection now, does the back line pretty much pick itself? Is it Lowe and Larmour on the wings and Kearney at full back?
Yep, that's what it looks like. And I think especially against Saracens, where the scoreboard has to be your friend, if they get ahead of you, they're a bit, you know, a bit like the Irish team. They're really, really good front runners. They keep you at arm's length. They just keep taking their scores and eventually force you to chase the game and pick you off. So you need game breakers and you need someone like James Lowe. It was him who broke out of his own 22 to create the score for Gary Ringrose last season. It was him against Toulouse that was able to, you know, at the end of a brilliant move, fight his way over the line when you know, most wingers would have been stopped and recycled and set it up for another phase. And Larmour has that ability to break things wide open. I think he's possibly vulnerable to, I think, you know, I can see Ben Spencer and Owen Farrell trying to go after him in the way they went after Mike Haley last time out. They go up, they break the ball down. I was talking to Robbie Henshaw on Monday about how it's going to be like when he was playing for Westmeath in minor football. He has to, you know, it's about winning that breaking ball. So the back line will be a massive factor, but I think what it comes down to again is that the Ireland England game and those dominant tackles and that kind of, remember when just after that England game, suddenly we heard about was dominant tackles. Yeah. It was this new stat that Six Nations had come out with. But the way they dominated physically that day, if they can repeat that again against, by and large, the same pack, Saracens will be on to a winner. Leinster need to get their physicality up, and maybe that's where that 3-week gap will help in terms of being able to get physically up for this.
Winning that breaking ball,
Just to add to Rory, like another way of getting your physicality up is to avoid the physicality in the first instance. Like Ireland, when they played against England, like I think we were all surprised with the vicious ferocity of the England game. And we were just like, Irish players are blown away, but we in the stand were kind of blown away as well, if that makes sense. And a way of doing that is avoiding that in the first instance and knowing when to avoid it. So I think that the Leinster scrum is certainly perfect platform to take on that physicality. I think the Leinster lineup mall is another version, but I'd be surprised if they go toe-to-toe. I think there's going to be more variety, and that's where someone like Jack Conan can bring a greater footballing sense. And obviously the scrum half with Luke McGrath, whomever it is, has to have lots and lots of variety to avoid those big heavy hitters, because there's no value in it. Like there's sometimes you've no choice, but if 10 out of 10 you run into them, they're going to win the game. So if you reduce those ratio maybe 3 times because you know they're a better option, and then 7 times you do something better, I think that's a better outcome for Leinster.
Well, funnily enough, listening to your post-match analysis last year, Liam, that was exactly the point yourself and Andy Dunn were making about what Leinster did so well in that quarter-final, was that time and time again they chose the right option and didn't turn it into a physical battle. Now, I think a large part of that maybe a year ago was down to Eason Asewa, who was outstanding in that game. Obviously, he's not available this time round. So are you looking at James Lowe, who are you looking for to make those decisions that it turns into the type of battle that Leinster want?
Gary Ringrose. I think he is the key to getting, you know, he rises above these occasions. He's the one who always looks like he's an extra couple of seconds in tandem with Johnny Sexton, who Saracens targeted mercilessly in that first half last season, hit him late 4 times and actually got caught out a couple of times, so that, you know, Leinster got a bit of field position, a bit of joy out of their ill discipline, but they'll always try and, you know, ruffle his feathers a little bit. But Ringrose, I think, is the attacking key for Leinster. If you've got weapons like that outside him, if your 13 is as intelligent and as good a passer as Gary Ringrose is, he's the key to unlocking that defence. He's up against a different challenge. Last year was Marcelo Bosch, this year it's Alex Lvovsky, who's a converted 10, been a very good player for Saracens, quite physical, but also a good ball player. They'll look to pull him out of position and try and find space around them, I would feel, because I don't think Munster really were able to get any joy in that regard in the semi-final.
If you're watching on Facebook, YouTube or Twitter, be sure to get your comments in. The best comments will be chosen as our Heineken star comment, and you'll be in with a chance of winning some great prizes. Obviously, just before we get on to our prediction, as always now when it's Leinster, Saracens, Ireland, England, there's these same key individual battles time after time. Players who've gone on Lions tours who've been 1 and 2 in the pecking order, been the very best in Northern Hemisphere, Sexton and Farrell being the obvious one, but the one that we're going to see probably for the next decade, hopefully, is James Ryan, Amara Itoje. And generally, Ryan had the upper hand until this season, and the line-out and Saracens have won the most lineouts in this year's tournament. It's an area where they've been pretty much flawless. Like, Ryan needs a big game here.
He does. He always produces big games. Mm. It's whether those around them are able to go with him. But I mean, he's regularly, you know, tops the tackle count. I think he's the second highest carrier in the competition and the third highest tackler in the competition. And he'll probably finish the season top of both of those counts. They're different players. You know, I think I really hope they're both fit in 2021 and they both go on the Lions tour together because they're an ideal 4-5 combination. You've got your enforcer. Ryan can run a line out. You know, he spoke about a little bit on Monday about playing against Mauro Itoje, and you know, he said Itoje's better over the ball than him. Itoje's probably got a little bit more of the dog in the tight exchanges, but Ryan is just a Rolls Royce of a second row. He can do the dirty stuff. He can also free his hands. He can make big breaks. I'd like to see him free his hands a little bit more. I think that's the next stage of his development. But everything he's done so far, like, he hasn't turned 23 yet, and he's probably going to be the key figure in this game. And it's a worthy opponent. It's a really, really nice matchup. And yeah, like, you know, for all that we can big up these individual battles, sometimes they don't come to pass. But I do think that one of those players has a very good chance of winning man of the match. And you know, if it's the one on your side,
you're probably going to win the
game. Yeah.
Yeah. Liam, what's your prediction?
Jerome Garces is going to have an impact in this, which kind of potentially spoils the prediction. I think Leinster can do it. There is going to be I think, Rory, you referred to it, actually, keep the scoreboard ticking over. So penalty count is down. Interpretation of the breakdown is of huge importance. Has Leo Cullen had an opportunity to influence Garces' interpretation? They'll all be massive. But either side have both sides are Rolls Royces. They're the two best teams in Europe. And if the referee decision errs on Leinster's side, I think Leinster can do it.
I think Leinster will adapt to Garces better than Munster did 3 weeks ago. I think that
what was the issue 3 weeks ago? That it was just too loose around the breakdown?
He just let them get away with... And in fairness, if he's letting Saracens get away with murder, then Munster should have adapted and tried to get away with murder themselves. At one stage, Owen Farrell came in and cleared out Peter O'Mahony from behind him. I mean, you're supposed to... Whatever about going through the gate, he'd gone through someone else's gate. Like, it was ridiculous. But he got away with it, and you got to adapt to that. I think Leinster will be smarter. He reffed these two teams last season against each other. I think he reffed Ireland-England as well. They know him well, and they've had time to adapt.
So you need to know when to not be quite as disciplined.
Well, if it's the Wild West, it's the Wild West. You got to get down and dirty, and you know, you can't expect him to bail you out. If Owen Farrell's coming in from the wrong side, there's part of it you got to sort that out yourself within, you know, you've got to push him as far as you can. And I don't think Munster were smart enough about that a couple of weeks ago and got frustrated by it. At the same time, I think Saracens were always going to, you know, on the day, were always going to beat them. I think but it's definitely a factor, and it's who adapts best. But I think Liam's right. It's the two best teams in Europe. It's an era-defining fixture. I think Saracens are slightly in better place than Leinster are this season. And at this stage, without, you know, barring a late change that we don't know about, which is always chance with Leinster, it's going to be very, very tight, but I think Saracens might just edge this one.
All right, great stuff. Liam, thanks a lot for joining us.
No worries.
Rory, thank you as well. Cheers. A lot to savour. Enjoy your trip to Newcastle. We will be there for the weekend as well. Full live commentary of the Heineken Champions Cup final. We'll have Keith Wood, Andy Dunn and Conor Morris bring you full coverage of Leinster against Saracens.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.